It's Thursday, January 8th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hello, Stashers, and welcome back to the Normal Daily Audio Stash. For today's Stash, we're going to be taking a look at international news with news from Afghanistan and from Mexico with regards to the drug war. And it's hard to believe it, but lots of people are calling for legalization of drugs as a way to end the violence and corruption from these drug wars. Stay tuned for that in our hemp headlines. Also coming up on today's Stash, we're talking with Warren Edson from Denver, Colorado. He's an attorney with the Normal Legal Committee, and he's talking about the legal medical marijuana dispensaries in the state of Colorado. We hear a lot of news from California, but the Colorado dispensaries are kind of flying under the radar. We'll get Warren's take on that. Also, we've got our Southern California report with Terry Joyce. We're going to be speaking with her, and well, since we're only going to have him to kick around for another 12 days or so, President George W. Bush. So stay tuned for some comedy in our 420 comedy segment. Plus some more music from my good friend out in Nashville, Tennessee, Chief Greenbud. It's a podcast full of sticky, icky goodness. Let's get right to it. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Dr. Phil focuses on cannabis, ignores antidepressants in Omaha mall shooting. Last year, there was a horrible tragedy in Omaha when Robert Hawkins, 19, went to the mall and began shooting innocent people, killing 8 and himself. Yesterday, Hawkins' mother, Molly, appeared on the Dr. Phil television program so the two of them could get real about what led her son to go on a shooting rampage.
New Dr. Phil, the deadliest mall massacre in U.S. history.
I don't even know how to cut it.
Now,
I do feel
responsible?
Did the teen gunman's mother...
Those people that Robert killed, they were entitled to be saved.
Miss fatal warning signs...
Threats of killing or hurting people.
And...
Did you smoke marijuana with this kid?
What will this shooting victim say to her?
You knew there was an AK-47. You can't ignore these signs.
While Dr. Phil did emphasize Robert's troubled family life, history of depression and psychotic episodes, and easy access to an AK-47 assault rifle in exploring the reasons behind Robert's suicidal rampage, he also goes to great lengths to emphasize Robert's use of cannabis. One of his first questions to the mom is, "Did you smoke marijuana with the kid?" She admits that she had smoked marijuana with him once when he was 18 and a half on Thanksgiving. Dr. Phil references Robert's marijuana smoking four times, three marijuanas and one smoke illegal drugs. Do you suppose he's trying to influence his audience by leading them to think marijuana use turns people into violent sociopaths? Because if Dr. Phil is looking for a pharmacological reason for Robert's imbalance, he's not paying very close attention to all the possibilities. I ran a search on the Dr. Phil transcript looking for depressant, medication, and anti, and that brought me exactly one match in the entire 60-minute show, a reference to the time he was put on antipsychotics at the age of 3 and a half following molestation. And that led me to my good friend the Google. I wonder what fascinating things I can learn about young male spree killers and antidepressant medications. Well, a look at the CNN website for Anderson Cooper 360 brought me an interview with one of his friends, Sean Sanders, who said he wasn't sure how depressed Robert was, but knew that he was on antidepressants for the last couple of months. Now, looking back to some of the horrible mass shootings perpetrated by depressed young men, some of which Dr. Phil mentioned on his show, we go all the way back to 98 and Kip Kinkle in Oregon. He was on Prozac. In Notice, Idaho in 99, Sean Cooper fired a couple shotgun rounds in his school. He was on antidepressants. Of course, the notorious Columbine Massacre of April 20th, 1999, Eric Harris was on antidepressants, and Dylan Klebold's autopsy was never released. In May of 1999, T.J. Solomon in Georgia was on antidepressants when he wounded six of his classmates. In March of 2000, a 14-year-old girl named Elizabeth was on Prozac when she blasted away at students in Pennsylvania. March of 2001, El Cajon, 18-year-old Jason Hoffman was on Effexor and Celexa when he opened fire at his high school. April 10th of 2001, in Washington State, Corey Badsgard took a rifle to his high school, held classmates hostage while he was on a high dose of Effexor. In March of 2005, on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, Jeff Weiss, a 16-year-old, was under the influence of Prozac when he shot and killed nine people. And in 2006, in Bailey, Colorado, Dwayne Morrison went to his high school, shot and killed a girl, sexually assaulted six others. They found antidepressants in his vehicle. It isn't even controversial to point out that these antidepressant drugs lead to violence and suicidal ideation among young men. Such warnings are clearly printed on what they call a black box label on these drugs. Antidepressants increase the risk of suicidal thinking and behavior in children and adolescents with major depressive disorder and other psychiatric disorders. The warning begins. Those risks must be balanced against clinical need, the label indicates, in a warning surrounded by a black box, hence the black box designation. The new warnings will be carried on all antidepressants, including Anafrinil, Aventil, Celexa, Cymbalta, Desirel, Effexor, Elavil, Lexapro, Ludiamil, Luvox, Marplan, Nardil, Norpramin, Pamelor, Parnate, Paxil, Pexiva, Prozac, Remeron, Seraphim, Serzone, Cinequan, Sermentil, Symbiax, Tofranil, Tofranil PM, Triavil, Vivactil, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, and Zyban. And they say the names of medical marijuana strains are silly. Most of the rest of the civilized world won't even allow doctors to prescribe these medications to young people. But here in the United States, there is a lot of money to be made by scaring people to tell their doctor to prescribe the latest pill to make up for bad or negligent parenting. Why wouldn't Dr. Phil pay as much attention to the cocktails of antidepressant pharmaceutical medications Robert Hawkins was taking as to the cannabis he was smoking? Short answer? Cannabis doesn't buy any commercials on the Dr. Phil show. Ending the Taliban's money stream. So I'm reading the Washington, D.C. newspaper when I find this article on Afghanistan and the Taliban. It goes into detail about how the Taliban is funding its activities against our troops through trafficking in opium, which is a wonderful poppy that gives us helpful medicines like morphine, but mostly becomes very profitable illegal heroin. According to the drug czar himself, in 2007, Afghanistan was the world's largest opium supplier, accounting for 93% of the world's opium, according to UN estimates. Imagine my surprise when I discover that it's an opinion piece, and the author is calling for the U.S. to spend 1/100th of the cost of the Afghanistan war and just buy up all the opium. Imagine my increased surprise when I find the newspaper isn't the accusedly liberal Washington Post, but the definitely conservative Mooney-owned Washington Times. Placed beside the $200 billion Afghanistan has already exacted from American taxpayers, the cost of purchasing all Afghanistan opium hardly seems outsized. Currently, opium gum fetches about $50 a pound. The largest crop in Afghanistan's history was 8,200 tons in 2007. A year's worth of Afghan crop, at twice the going rate, would go for $2 to $2.5 billion. But even if the cost were $5 billion, the price would not seem untoward, especially given the paucity of alternative, and given the fact that opium, corruption, and the rise of the Taliban are single pieces of the same sorry cloth. Purchasing the whole opium crop of Afghanistan, at whatever price, would take the crop away from the traffickers without cutting more than half the economy out of Afghanistan. If opium crops were preemptively purchased, the traffickers and Afghanistan's most corrosive corruption would be directly confronted. The huge supply could be purchased by Americans who are specially cleared and stored in the United States, perhaps by a Security Council resolution assigned to the United Nations under American control for future medical emergencies. Let the Afghans produce the world's opium supply, providing them with an agricultural market to stabilize the economy, and take away the majority of the Taliban's income, and provide for a secure stockpile of emergency medicines? More and more, even conservatives are realizing that prohibition is the most expensive way to deal with the natural appetite for mind-altering drugs. Imagine if they took this idea to the Mexican cannabis market. Make it legal to buy and sell processed cannabis in America, but only legal to grow it commercially in Mexico. Turn the Mexican economy around by providing them a lucrative agricultural market, take away 70% of the Mexican mafia's income, and provide a secure stockpile of medicine for registered patients. I know, it should be legal to grow here too. But in this hypothetical, at least 89% of the people arrested for cannabis would be free from harassment. U.S. plans border surge against any drug wars. The soaring level of violence in Mexico resulting from the drug wars there has led the United States to develop a plan for a surge of civilian and perhaps even military law enforcement should the bloodshed spread across the border, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said Wednesday. Mr. Chertoff said the criminal activity in Mexico, which has caused more than 5,300 deaths in the last year, had long troubled American authorities, but it reached a point last summer, he said, where he ordered specific plans to confront, in this country, the kind of shootouts and other mayhem that in Mexico have killed members of warring drug cartels, law enforcement officials, and bystanders, often not far from the border. Quote, "We completed a contingency plan for border violence, so if we did get a significant spillover, we have a surge, if I may use that word, capability to bring in not only our own assets, but even work with the Defense Department," end quote, Mr. Chertoff said in a telephone interview. Officials of the Homeland Security Department said the plan called for aircraft, armored vehicles, and special teams to converge on border trouble spots, with the size of the force depending on the scale of the problem. Military forces would be called upon if civilian agencies like the Border Patrol and local law enforcement were overwhelmed, but the officials said military involvement was considered unlikely. Yes, of course. Military forces and hardware within our own borders beating back the warring Mexican drug cartels. That couldn't have any unintended consequences, could it? Imagine the fun. Armored personnel carriers roaming through Tucson. Platoons of body-armored troops patrolling El Paso. No-fly zones patrolled by F-16s over Las Cruces. All so we can battle the heavily armed Mexicans who are fighting over the lucrative trade in bringing marijuana to gringos who want it. Nothing like a few shootouts on Main Street to liven up the 11 o'clock news. Or you could just legalize it. Take away 70% of the cartel's business and focus those 18,000 Border Patrol agents on stopping terrorists and illegal immigration. That way, the military can do its job outside the country as the Founding Fathers intended. People are obviously getting and smoking the Mexican marijuana, else the cartels wouldn't be so powerful. Legalization won't mean those people smoke more pot, nor that more people will smoke pot. But even if they did, wouldn't you prefer more mellow Americans to military firefights in our cities?
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check norml.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we go all around the country looking for the latest stories in medical marijuana. And oftentimes we find ourselves in the state of California, where medical marijuana got its start in 1996. And of course, there's all sorts of stories that go down about the dispensaries out in California. But a lot of people aren't aware that the situation in Colorado also has some dispensaries. And it's quite an interesting subject. And I've brought a member of the Normal Legal Committee here from Denver, Colorado, to discuss it a little further. Please welcome Warren Edson to the show. Warren, welcome.
Hey, welcome, Russ. Good to speak with you.
So like I mentioned in the introduction here, you know, the topic here is dispensaries. And a lot of people, when they think of medical marijuana dispensaries, the first place they think of is California, where they have hundreds of these things. But what's going on now in Colorado with the dispensary situation?
And we have storefront dispensaries, meaning a place you can walk into and choose your type of medicine, if you're a patient, of course. And there's somewhere around 25 storefront dispensaries in the state of Colorado right now, and probably three or four delivery services in addition.
Wow. And of course, we see a lot of attention paid by the federal government to these dispensaries in California with their raids, and they'll smash up all the equipment and take stuff and really harass the patients and caregivers there. How come we haven't heard of this happening in Colorado?
You know, Russ, I don't have a good answer to that question. You know, I'm knocking on wood. We've been lucky enough not to have involvement. You know, obviously remind your listeners that the distribution of marijuana for medical reasons or otherwise is against federal law. But we've been lucky enough not to have that happen here. That might be in part because we really, as of January last year, we had about 1,700 patients. Now we have grown to close to 6,000 patients in the last few months. But, I mean, we have nowhere near the 100,000 type patients California
sure.
has. So that might be one of the reasons.
So maybe it's just the fact that Colorado's program is kind of low profile compared to California's.
Very much so.
Okay. Now, how is it in the Colorado law? I understand it's Amendment 20 there in Colorado that gave these medical marijuana rights to people. How is it that in that law it allows for the dispensaries to exist?
Well, because basically it allows for a caregiver as named by a patient. So a patient can name somebody as their caregiver, and they call. They don't call. They send a piece of paperwork into the state registry, and that caregiver gets named on the patient's card. And this gives the caregiver permission to acquire and hold marijuana for that patient and then later transfer the marijuana to that patient. And from a legal perspective, the issue is whether or not the marijuana is legal or illegal. And there's no aspect of the amendment that says, you know, if money is part of that transaction, it makes a transaction that's otherwise legal illegal. Mm. So we've had storefronts in existence now for 3 or 4 years. We have had a recent blossoming of storefronts as we've had an increase in patients.
I see. So it's different than, say, the Oregon model or some of these other states where they specifically say there shall be no transfer for consideration then.
Oh, and this specifically does not say that.
Right, right. Okay. So we haven't heard much of it on the national level, but on the local level, how have the communities reacted to these dispensaries?
Surprisingly well. There's kind of a don't ask, don't tell policy, though, I'd have to say, to a point, because most, at least, I advise about 6 or 7 dispensaries right now here in the state, and most of the people I work with have gone to city officials prior to opening and made everybody aware of what's going on, and they make sure they're registered with the city and they're paying all their taxes and following all their employee rules and all that fun stuff. So most of these places are pretty open and obvious. And like I'm saying, have existed without any issues.
Yeah. So you mentioned that they register with the city and such. Does the state, or you said it's kind of don't ask, don't tell. So is there any state regulations or control rules for these dispensaries, or is it kind of just a self-monitored system?
It is essentially a self-monitored system, I think in part because of the fact that the unusual nature of our medical marijuana rules, or it stems from our Constitution.
I see.
And I think it could frankly be a little bit difficult to regulate without some people indicating that their constitutional rights might be being violated. So there's been very little no regulation. And in fact, there's no written case law in Colorado, even though this has been in existence for more than 10 years now.
Wow, that's amazing. So at the local level then, you're not seeing a backlash from other businesses or law enforcement or anything like that?
Certainly not from law enforcement. In fact, some of the dispensaries I work with work with law enforcement, and in fact, once or twice a year have law enforcement come through the facility, see what's going on.
Wow.
It's in fact done to an unusual point where one of our municipalities uses the dispensary to train their officers on how to recognize marijuana.
Wow, that's amazing, and I sure wish we could get that kind of cooperation and understanding from some of the law enforcement in these California counties that are so reluctant to embrace the dispensary systems there. Now, is that would you think that owes maybe to a certain culture in Colorado compared to California?
I guess, I mean, you know, partly, and partly, most of the dispensaries here have been fairly well-behaved, and because they came second or third, depending on how you want to view the states, they were able to look at some of the great dispensaries in California as models. Mm. And so I think there's been a lot of community activism by these dispensaries. There is a lot of, in terms of raising money to feed the homeless, mm-hmm. to clothing donations, food bank, things like that have been set up by these dispensaries. So it's not just providing a service to the patients, but it's also trying to provide a service to the community.
Yeah, and speaking of the community, you mentioned that they are paying all their applicable license fees and taxes. Is anyone out there estimating how much sales tax revenue Colorado makes from these dispensaries?
You know, we haven't quite gotten there yet. I imagine over the next year that can be better estimated. We know that there are at least 2,000 patients using these dispensaries. And so if you just follow through with the basic math, you have to figure there's some pretty big taxes being paid.
Yeah. Now, geographically speaking, you mentioned there's 20 or so of these dispensaries. Are they more located around the Denver area, or are they better spread out through the state?
Using Colorado jargon,
yeah,
we refer to it as the Front Range.
Yeah.
They're mostly on the east side of the Rocky Mountains.
Okay.
Because we have three or four in Fort Collins, which is up north. We have Boulder's just a little south. There are a couple there. There are probably four or five in the metro Denver area. There are probably four or five down in Colorado Springs. And then an additional couple down in Pueblo.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, I know there's an additional one in Durango, which is way in the southwest corner of the state. And then there is also a facility in the Grand Junction area, which is in the western part of the state. And then a couple of the bigger dispensaries run services where once a month they drive to the other parts of the state and provide medicine to their patients in that part.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, all this sounds really great, Warren. So I'm wondering if people out there are curious about the Colorado program or where they can find these dispensaries, are there any resources on the web where they could look this stuff up?
Colorado State Department of Health has a wonderful website, believe it or not. The people that run the program, and unfortunately I don't have it right here in front of me, Russ.
That's all right.
If you Google Colorado medical marijuana, I believe it's the second thing on the list.
We'll find that and put a link to it up on our blog at stash.normal.org, so it's easy for people to find. And how about
the
dispensary?
All the forms for the state.
Oh.
It has a copy of Amendment 20, so you can read what rights you have. It has some question and answers. It has also, and most interestingly, is they keep very up-to-date statistics. All over the place, from the number of patients in the state to the number of cards denied to what counties they're in to, in fact, what illnesses they have applied under.
Hmm.
And additionally, it even tells roughly how many different doctors have signed recommendations.
Wow, that's excellent. And how about for the dispensaries? Do they have websites or is a collection? Is there some sort of a directory of these dispensaries anywhere?
There is not really a directory of the dispensaries. My website, which is warrenedson.com, does have some links to some of the individual dispensaries, as well as links to, like, the Colorado Department of Health and other things.
Excellent. Well, we'll put a link to that up on our blog as well. Warren Edson is a criminal defense attorney practicing in Denver and a member of the Normal Legal Committee, helping a lot of these dispensaries to help the medical marijuana patients of Colorado. Warren, thanks for joining us, and thanks for all your great work.
Thanks, Russ.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Chief Greenbud is not only a great singer-songwriter in the Nashville tradition, he's also a right swell dude. We met here in Portland when he came out for our Million Marijuana March. Then I got to go to Nashville and speak at a Tennessee Normal event, so we met up again and headed back to his basement studio, or as I might call it, Chief Greenbud Nashville Studio Headquarters. He played a little bit of this tune for me, the hit that makes you cough, and I was ready to sing along the obvious next line, is the hit that gets you off, except he was bound and determined to have me prove that line of the song, so I was coughing at the time. You can get more of Chief Greenbud's music at myspace.com/CGB. And by the way, the chief part is a verb, not a noun, as in to Chief Greenbud. This is Chief Greenbud with The Hit That Makes You Cough.
Excuse me, is that your lung? May not be a doctor, but it looks like it's come undone. The good news is you're gonna catch a buzz like you never thought. 'Cause the hit that makes you cough, that's the hit that gets you off. Somewhere out there, there's a hit that's gonna knock you down. When you smoke it, you'll know it. When you're convulsing on the ground, and though you may be in agony, here's a pleasant thought. It's the hit that makes you cough, that gets you off. Damn, dude, you've got to breathe. Your face is as red as a fire truck, and your eyes make you look Chinese. You can try and hold it in, just like you were taught. But it's the hit that makes you cough, that's the hit that gets you off. Somewhere out there, there's a hit that's gonna knock you down. When you smoke it, you'll know it. When you're convulsing on the ground, though you may be in agony, here's a pleasant thought. It's the hit that makes you cough, that gets you off. And though you may be in agony, here's a pleasant thought. It's the hit that makes you cough. Well, it's the hit that makes you cough. Well, it's the hit that makes you cough, that gets you off.
Of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Weed.
That's hooey, bally, hooey, ha.
Weed.
Where any office boy or young mechanic.
Now it's time to take a look at 420 Comedy with the star of Hollyweed Live. You know her from the season one of Last Comic Standing on NBC. It's Terry Joyce. Well, it's another fine Thursday. Time for some more cannabis comedy with Terry Joyce. Terry, welcome back to the program.
Hello.
Hey, you know, I'm telling you, fall has broken here in Portland, Oregon. The rains have come and it's dipped down to about 60 degrees. So, let me know. Let me know how it's going down there in California. Nice and sunny still?
It is nice and sunny. It is getting slightly cooler. But we can still wear a t-shirt and, you know, no coats and, you know, shorts still. Yeah. It's still pretty nice.
Yep.
It's lovely, actually.
Up here in the Pacific Northwest, we're saying goodbye to the sun for 7 months. Bye, sun! Hey, you know, the other thing that's kind of happening all around the country here that's kind of gloomy is this recent economic crisis, you know, with Wall Street going up and down, and they're talking about this big bailout, you know, and that's got to be scaring some people down there.
Oh, definitely. You know, somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, how does this affect you? I mean, you know, your investments. And I said, well, you know, I've been broke forever. I'm like, welcome to my world.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe we should, you know, I can, you know, let's all go to Supercuts and get our hair cut and scrounge up some money for some smokes. I mean, for someone who, you know, is an artist or has always kind of struggled, you hope it doesn't get any worse than what it already is.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think that we're at a point in this country where a lot of the comfortableness, you know, how we were comfortable with our state of living is going to change for a lot of people, and it's going to be a big adjustment. That's my prediction.
Well, you know, last week you brought us an incredible interview with Comedy Jesus, and I was just wondering if you've used any of your amazing contacts this week to bring us anyone that could help shed some light on this issue.
I do have a contact. You know, this person. You know, some people. You know, believe that he is. You know, the Antichrist. I mean, some people believe that. You know, he's doing God's will. And he's a very, 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 very powerful man in the country right now. I'd like to welcome our President George Bush.
President George W. Bush joining us on the Daily Audio Stash. Well, Mr. President, thank you for being here.
Well, good to be here.
It's just amazing you could make the time with this financial crisis that's going on right now.
Oh, it'll all work itself out. I'm actually McCain and I are golfing today.
Oh, you and McCain are golfing and that'll solve the problem.
Well, you know, I figure... Most problems happen in the country. I usually tend to be golfing or reading. And so, you know, I figure it'll all work itself. Everything's been fine up until now, right?
Yeah, everything's been just peachy for the last 7 years. Absolutely. You know, I was thinking about this $700 billion bailout, Mr. President, and there was a study that was done out of Harvard University that showed that if we legalized marijuana, that we could raise about $14 billion a year. We could pay off this $700 billion bailout with legal weed in just 50 years. Do you think that's a good idea, Mr. President?
Here's why that's a bad idea. All right, there's two major reasons. One, first of all, you can't have people smoking marijuana.
Why not, Mr. Bush? We have people drinking alcohol. We have people. What is the difference between allowing people to smoke marijuana?
Different. I crave alcohol. I don't crave marijuana.
Well, that's the point. You know, I mean, most people, you know, don't end up craving marijuana like they do alcohol. So actually, it's better for the country.
Right, but I'm the decider, right?
Yeah, but it's better for the consciousness of man. I mean, you know, you're the decider. Don't we have a democracy, Mr. Bush?
Well, we do have a democracy, but it's also what I say. And it's my job to decide it, and it's your job to follow orders.
You sound like you're a bad parent.
Well, you might think of me that way, but here's the thing. People start smoking, and then they start thinking outside the box.
Oh.
Yes. I think it's time to think outside the box, don't you? I mean, you're having to think outside the box to save the economy, and we're just giving you a suggestion.
But when they do that, they stop following orders. It makes my job real hard.
Ah, now we're getting right down to the crux of it. So, Mr. Bush, as you're looking at this current election that's going on right now, you've got Senator McCain versus Senator Obama. And, well, I know, of course, that you're a Republican, so I imagine you're supporting Mr. McCain. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, but we know how hard Mr. McCain's working today because he's golfing with you. So
Well, that's part of politics is golfing. You know, that's how things get done in Washington. You go to Florida, you golf. I recommend everyone go to Disney World.
Everybody go to Disney World and golf. Now, Mr. President, in the past, though, this is what I was getting at, was that, you know, looking at different candidates that Mr. Obama, like yourself, in his youth, used marijuana and cocaine. Do you feel any affinity for Barack Obama, since you both had used a little in your past?
Well, I don't feel any kinship with him. I know Cheney does, but I will say this, when I was in college in Texas, I used to do piles of cocaine. So I understand that. Never liked the marijuana. So I understand it. I don't know why he quit. I haven't.
My question is if you did mounds of cocaine and you like that, but is the reason why you're not legalizing marijuana simply because of the fact that you don't like it personally? I don't think that's the fair choice.
I don't like it personally, and it makes people think in ways that I don't want them to think, and any good government wouldn't want them to think. They start thinking for themselves, they might have some filter removed, and they might realize that something I said wasn't true. And by the way, I know you're all not going to broadcast this, but because this is just between us. But I figure if we could just keep that out of the loop, all that truth stuff, it's like a truth serum. Makes people understand what's really going on. I don't like it. It makes our country run less smoothly. If everyone just said, things would be a lot easier if I was a dictator.
Yes, I remember you saying that once before. Yeah. Okay, so we absolutely can't legalize marijuana because too many people would think for themselves, and you know, do you think maybe they would do, you know, some silly, crazy, out of the box thinking, like, you know, taking care of the planet and not depending on foreign oil and stuff like that?
Let me just put it this way: if marijuana were legal, I would have been impeached 6 years ago.
Aha. Uh-huh.
People would want you for another 4 years if you legalized marijuana. If you legalized marijuana, you'd go down in history books as a positive figure in instead of what you're going to go down now.
I don't think so. I think people would sort of wake up to other things that I've done, other corrupt things I've done in my administration, including an unjustified war, helping out Cheney's friends at Halliburton. We pretty much just got into office to make some money and help out our friends. And I think people would start to realize that if they let their mind go a little bit with marijuana.
Well, Mr. Bush, what do you have planned? You've only got a few months left now in your presidency. What do you have planned for the future? Vacation, clearing brush, anything like that?
I'm going to replenish the coffers. Also, I'm moving to Dubai just before the end of my term. Just make sure nothing, you know, I just don't want anyone coming after me.
You
and
think
there's
people...
no extradition treaty there. So, you know, we're all of us moving to Dubai. We got a whole floor. Me, Cheney, Rumsfeld, all the old school guys.
Over in that big tower or something?
Big tower, that's right. We got the kind of the middle section.
I see. Okay, well, President George W. Bush, thank you for joining us here. It's been your first time here on the Daily Audio Stash. And do you have any words of wisdom you'd like to impart to our cannabis-loving audience?
Well, I'd just like to say, if you're experimenting, the thing to really stay away from is the Bubble Kush and the Platinum OG, because that tends to really wise people up as to what I'm doing. So
the bubble.
Stay away from those two types.
Okay. Well, the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush. And if you had any, if you were the kind of person who were into comedy and you like to follow stand up comedians and stuff, is there any websites that you would suggest that people should look at?
So there's a lot of good sites out there. I'd actually like to, more so I'd like to recommend people stay away from, I always say go to DisneyWorld.com, but I'd like to recommend sites people stay away from. Don't go to RawStory.com, okay?
Okay.
They're printing too much bad stuff about RawStory. Don't go to CrooksAndLiars.com.
That would be bad.
Those are two sites I recommend you not go to. Don't go to Huffington Post.
Okay. We got it. Huffington Post, Crooks and Liars, Raw Story. We'll stay away. Thank you, Mr. President, and say hi to the twins for us.
I sure will. I sure will.
Well, Terry, that's
bye, Mr. President.
Terry, that's quite amazing that in, you know, two successive weeks you managed to get us Jesus Christ and George W. Bush. How do you do it?
You know what? I just I'm charming, you know, radical Russ.
You're charming.
I mean, you know, they seek me out.
Yeah,
it's amazing. As a matter of fact, I got a call from Mr. Bush asking me if he could be on the Daily Normal audio stash.
Wow. Well, you know,
I was really impressed. I mean, even though I don't like him, you know, I figured there would be some listeners that would be interested in hearing what he had to say.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you know, thank you for bringing us such great guests here for our 420 comedy. And we do it every week here on Thursday. And you've been a real joy and a real help to the show. We really appreciate it, Terry.
Oh, thank you. I love doing it.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. We'll see you next week, okay?
Who knows? Maybe next week we'll have Gandhi.
Maybe,
you know?
Gandhi. We don't know. Back from the grave.
Yeah.
Thanks, Terry. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from the author Norman Mailer, who wrote, quote, "One's condition on marijuana is always existential. One can feel the importance of each moment and how it is changing one. One feels one's being. One becomes aware of the enormous apparatus of nothingness. One becomes aware of the war between each of us, how the nothingness in each of us seeks to attack the being of others, how our being, in turn, is attacked by the nothingness in others." End quote. Boy, I better read that two or three more times to fully get it. Or perhaps I need to just smoke more. Seems pretty deep to me. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And don't forget, our Pro Cannabis Ad Contest with $10,000 in prizes ends next Thursday, so get those videos submitted soon. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.